Hi, I'm Chef Andrew Carmelini of La Conda Verde, The Dutch, and Lafayette. And you're listening to Food Fridays with Leonard Lope on WNYC and NYC.org.
Even if you find football a bore, one part of Super Bowl watching that almost everyone loves is the snacks. According to the National Retail Foundation, Americans spend over $160 million on chips for last year's game, and guacamole fans will consume 139 million pounds of avocado this coming Sunday. But if your spread includes chips, dips, nachos, a snack mix, perhaps, there are some things that you should keep in mind if you want to keep everyone happy and well-fed. Dan Pashman of WNYC's The Sparkful podcast gives us some suggestions for snacks. He joins us now. And he also suggests ways to help navigate the pitfalls of chip and dip etiquette. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show. Although, Dan, I expected you to be in studio. What happened?
I know. I'm sorry. I live ways out on Long Island, Leonard, and we got nearly a foot of snow out here. And so I'm flying solo with my two kids. I just got them down for their naps. I told them that I had to go talk to my friend Leonard, and hopefully they're sleeping right now.
What are some of your favorite dip recipes?
I'm kind of a purist. I love a really good, freshly made guacamole. To me, when the avocados are just right and ripe and it's a little bit tart and a little bit spicy and a little bit creamy and a little bit salty, you really can't go wrong. I like a good 7-layer dip as well. I think that you got to watch out, though. A lot of times people will put they'll build a 7-layer dip in the wrong kind of vessel. They'll build it in a vessel that's sort of narrow and tall, and so you can't get all 7 layers because the thing is too deep. And so you want to build a 7-layer dip kind of wide and flat with very thin layers so that you can combine all the flavors.
Now, just to rehash an old internet beef, is it ever okay to put peas in guacamole? Melissa Clark took a lot of heat for suggesting that.
She did. I mean, I thought it was an interesting suggestion. I mean, I feel like... I'm sort of the school, like, if it tastes good to you, then there's nothing wrong with it. You might not technically be able to call it guacamole, but that doesn't mean it's not delicious.
Now, can I share a hint?
Please.
A Mexican friend says you should never squeeze the avocado. The best way to find out whether it's fresh is to look at the stem and try to wiggle the stem. If it's really loose, you can buy it. If it's still rigid, don't. And my recipe for guacamole is the one I've often found in Mexico: onion, garlic, jalapeno pepper, tomatillo, coarse salt, lime, avocado, and I add pomegranate seeds at the end.
Ooh, I like the sound of that. That probably adds a nice little bit of texture as well as sweetness.
Absolutely, and a wonderful color. Of course, you should never puree a guacamole.
Sure, sure. I had a great guacamole a couple years ago when I was judging a guacamole competition that had white grapefruit in it, really sweet grapefruit, and that kind of did something, instead of lime.
Well, that offset the favor of the peas.
Yeah. but it was good. That grapefruit was good, and that's kind of, I think it's similar, not the same, but similar to what you're talking about with the pomegranate seeds, which sounds very interesting.
When you're dipping a chip, what should you keep in mind if you want to keep that chip from totally breaking apart?
Holy moly. Well, how much time have you got, Leonard?
Is there a technique?
I've interviewed a rocket scientist and a structural engineer on this subject. First question for you, Leonard, and we can walk through this together. When you, if you're holding just a classic triangular tortilla chip, mm-hmm. when you go to dip it, do you hold one point and dip 2 points, or do you hold a straight edge and dip 1 point?
I hold a straight edge.
Why?
Just because just seems natural to me, although I've never thought much about it.
Okay.
I guess I could do it any way that someone tells me I should do it. What did the structural engineer tell you?
Well, basically, there's not necessarily a right or wrong, but it's very important that you understand the factors at play here. When you do your approach is sort of the safer approach. It's more stable, and you're less likely to break the chip off in the dip, but you have less surface on which to gather mm-hmm. dip. The flip side is when you hold a single point and lead with 2 points, you're putting more strain on a thin part of the chip. You're increasing the chance of breakage, but you have a much bigger area on which to collect dip. So the key is, most people, the mistake they make when you break your chip off in the dip is that they insert the chip vertically and they go straight down deep into the dip, and then they do a sort of lever action that snaps the chip. Instead, what you want to do is to hold the single point of the triangular chip and sweep horizontally across the top, kind of like a snowplow. Snowplow across the top of the dip, and you will put a lot less strain on the chip.
But if your chip does break, what's the best way to recover it?
Well, I mean, you can do one move that a lot of people know that I sometimes call Saving Private Ryan, when you send a new chip in to recover his fallen brother. And so, you know, you can do it that way. If it's really in there deep, you may just have to sort of bury it and slowly back away and hope that nobody notices.
Is double dipping your chip as bad as Seinfeld made it out to be?
I mean, you know, there actually have been some scientific studies on this that have shown that there is some degree of germ transfer. But there's also a lot of studies that show that most germs and bacteria in the world are good for us. So I think the science is a little bit mixed. I think that the best way to do it so that you can double dip without doing what upsets people about double dipping is you take your chip, you dip it, you bite the chip, then you turn the chip around. Mm-hmm. Now you're holding the bitten side of the chip, and you dip the unbitten end of the chip into the dip, and that way you're not mixing any saliva, you're not doing anything that would upset anyone, and you're still maximizing dip to chip ratio.
Do you like scoop chips?
You know, I admire the attempt at innovation. I like that they exist. I do feel like when I put them in my mouth, the vertical side walls of the scoops tend to cut the roof of my mouth, which results in a condition I've identified as Captain Crunch's complaint. But what I have figured out, Leonard, tell me what you think of this. You know, one of the things the structural engineer taught me when we were talking ships is that one of the strongest shapes in all of engineering is an arch. Like many of the Roman aqueducts are, you know, still standing today are supported by arches. And a dome is essentially a three-dimensional arch, mm-hmm. which is why so many great buildings that were built a dome still stand today. And when you take the scoop chip and flip it upside down and hold it on your fingertip like a thimble, the scoop becomes a dome, and it is virtually indestructible. I mean, you could run that thing through cream cheese or peanut butter, let alone guacamole, and not risk breakage.
What about the difference between tortilla chips and potato chips? I would assume that the tortilla chips are a little stronger. And then if you make your own at home, you can make them even stronger than that.
Yeah. Do you make your own tortilla chips sometimes?
I do.
Wow.
Well, if you have old tortillas, what do you do with them?
Right.
They should be eaten fresh.
How thick do you like your chips, Leonard?
Well, however thick the tortillas are. But then it's a matter of how long you fry them and how hard they become.
Right. I mean, I think that, right, I would say the average tortilla chip is probably sturdier than the average potato chip. But there are some very thin tortilla chips, and there are some very thick potato chips. I'm not a big fan of dipping potato chips. I kind of feel like most potato chips aren't very good, but really good potato chips are to be appreciated on their own.
And then you could always just take the dip and put it on a plate and dip it that way.
That's right.
But would that be a dip anymore?
Interesting question. That might be. Then you're just sort of using your chip as a utensil.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but at least then you can forget double dipping. You can quadruple dip, and it's yours, so you can do whatever you want with it.
What are your thoughts on those giant football-shaped cream cheese spreads, that large, massive cream cheese with meat, pimento, onions, et cetera, covered with pepperoni or nuts?
It's like a mound of cream cheese with nuts on the outside, and you slice it open, and it's just like a pound of pepperoni inside. And yeah, it's funny. Just looking at that picture, I thought I could smell pepperoni. But I'm not the biggest pepperoni fan, so that's my personal taste. I'm sure that could be good. But I also feel like the Super Bowl is kind of a long-haul event. From the coin toss to the final whistle, it's 4 or 5 hours. And so you want to be able to eat and drink and be merry throughout. So I think that sometimes people go a little overboard with super heavy foods. Like, you want a wide array of different snackable treats that you can nibble on over a period of hours and drink and enjoy yourself and not be too hungry, but also not feel like you need to pass out on the couch at halftime.
I'm speaking with Dan Pashman, host of WMIC's The Sparkful podcast, with new episodes every Monday. And, of course, there's also the book from Simon & Schuster called Eat More Better. What about nacho toppings like sour cream and guacamole? How should they be served? On the side or on the dish with the nachos themselves?
I mean, that's a tough one. I like them. I tend to like them on top. This kind of goes against a lot of my theories in other respects. Like, I don't like condiments on my hot dog or burger. I like them on the side. I like to dip on a per-bite basis so that I can control ratios in every bite. But I feel like with nachos, what makes a great nacho bite is the variety of chips that have encountered different life experiences on their way to your mouth. You have the plain dry chips, you have the super cheesy chips, and then you have those chips that have had the toppings sitting on them for a little while, and they turn a little bit soggy as they absorb the flavors of the guacamole and sour cream and salsa. And those chips, when combined with a crunchy chip and a cheesy chip, can be really, really good.
What about nacho etiquette? If you put out a plate of nachos, what can you do to ensure that everybody gets a fair share of the best nachos with the most stuff on them?
Well, this is a big question. I mean, have you ever had this situation, Leonard? Have you ever had a plate of nachos in front of you and someone else kept getting all the cheesiest bites?
Well, no. I'm not sure I can remember the last time I had a plate of nachos in front
right,
of me.
Right. Well, I mean, it is an issue. And actually, you know, I think that this gets pretty deep. The question that confronts you and your friends when a plate of nachos arrives in front of you is one that the founding fathers debated. It's one that remains one of the core issues of the debate between factions of our government today, and that is, what is the best way to allocate resources? You know, you have the most desirable chips, you have the least desirable chips, you have the chips that some people like and others don't, that have sauce on them or whatever. And should you have an overarching central authority that reallocates and reallocates, distributes and redistributes the wealth? Or should it be free market? Should you just, if one person is better at picking the cheesiest chips, should that person just get all the cheese? And I think different people will come down differently on this question, and you can kind of learn a little bit about people by asking them. I kind of fall somewhere in the middle. I do feel like you need to have individual liberty. People need to be able to pick the bites that they want, but you also need to – there needs to be some kind of – you know, we form society for a reason. There's a social contract in place here. And that's why I call the one hand, two chips rule of nacho morality. And that says that, yeah, you can take one hand and grab two chips and pull it off the nacho pile. And whatever comes with those two chips is yours. But if you start sweeping all the cheese off, you know, then government, big government needs to step in.
Does this also apply to a bowl of party mix? Like, Chex Mix, how do you take that from the bowl? Should a scoop be provided, or can you just dip your hand in there and try to take the best stuff?
This one's even deeper than nachos. I mean,
you wrote a piece about this for Slate, didn't you?
That's right. That was an excerpt from my book, and it's on Slate. And it's I wrote this whole Socratic dialogue in which Socrates and Nietzsche and Aristotle and Kant all come together over a bowl of snack mix to argue whether or not it's permissible to cherry pick specific ingredients out of a snack mix. Like, if you only eat out the peanuts and leave the rest, are you depriving other people of the intended snack mix experience, or are you just, you know, pursuing your own version of deliciousness? And, you know, I think Kant would argue that equal access to and distribution of snack mix ingredients is a categorical imperative. But, you know, I think that Nietzsche would argue that you know, the freedom to pursue our own version of deliciousness is the truest manifestation of the will to power. And so, you know, these are big issues. I don't know if you knew that your Super Bowl party was going to get this deep, Leonard.
It's just a game. Neither of the Super Bowl team's names, the Broncos or the Panthers, inspire thoughts of related foods. But what about drinks? Is beer the preferable drink for something like this, or mixed drinks or wines?
I mean, I think it depends a bit on you and your personal preference. I would just encourage people to think about, again, the Super Bowl is a long-haul event. It's going to be a number of hours. Beer has less alcohol, obviously.
Does it pair better with the dishes that we're talking about?
I think What I would recommend that you do, I mean, I think it depends on the beers and it depends on the specifics and it depends. I mean, I think that you can, me personally, I feel like those things can be a little bit overthought. I think you should drink what tastes good to you for the most part. But I would just encourage people to, you know, you want to drink something without drinking too much. You don't want to get so full. So it's sort of about moderation. So for me at the Super Bowl, I would typically start with one or two beers consumed at a moderate pace while snacking. And then when I start to feel a little bit full, and one more beer might make me feel really full and kind of sleepy, that's when I switch to something a little bit stronger that can cut through that food. And now I'm enjoying myself. I'm having a good time. And I'm also eating. And that's like sort of a nice, moderate, fun party experience.
And are you one of those people who really gets involved with the game, or are you just mostly there for the snacking?
I used to be, tell you the truth, Leonard, I used to be a huge football fan. I'm less of a fan now, partly because I have little kids, partly because I personally have, been a little bit turned off by the things that the NFL, the way the NFL has handled various situations over the years and
concussions,
issues around the health and safety of the players.
And then, of course, there's halftime. Do you eat more or less while the so-called entertainment is occurring?
Well, you know, now that I live with my wife and two young daughters, like the halftime show is like for a 2.5- and 5-year-old, you know, the halftime show is like nothing they've ever seen before. So the kids get really into that. The halftime show is usually like I want to not watch it, but I can't look away.
Yeah,
it's such a spectacle. I mean, I went to the Super Bowl, geez, 15 years ago now, and just the spectacle of the event is really mind-boggling. I mean, you're watching a football game, and I've been to many football games. You're sitting out there in the stands watching a football game, and halftime comes, and the players run off the field, and this swarm of humanity comes from running onto the field from every corner of the stadium, and they set up a giant concert stage in 4 minutes. And then, like, back then it was like Britney Spears, NSYNC, and the Backstreet Boys all come out and do a concert for 12 minutes and then leave, and the swarm of people comes back and takes apart this giant rock stage, and a football game resumes. And it's very surreal being there. You're like, did that just happen? Did I just see the biggest acts in music in the middle of a football game? So it's kind of fun and kind of weird.
Dan Pashman is the host of WMIC's The Sporkful podcast. Next Monday, will you be talking about the Super Bowl?
I'll probably be talking about the Super Bowl and Lunar New Year, which is Monday, and we have a Lunar New Year episode of The Sporkful up this week, and I've been enjoying a lot of Tang Yuan soup in honor of Lunar New Year. I'm about to give my kids their first taste of it tonight.
Well, I don't know how authentic you like your Lunar New Year to be, because many of the foods are not necessarily to Western taste, but are important because their names suggest things like good luck for the next year.
Right, right. Yeah, so I'm going to try to make it as authentic as I can. I'm learning. I'm trying to learn.
Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thanks, Leonard. Take care.